The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
All three major U.S. indexes soar to new records after the Fed holds rates steady. And what's happening at the southern border with a Texas immigration law on hold?
We're at the point now where we have been for the last 150 years of the federal government still being in charge of federal border enforcement.
Plus, why Wall Street is investing in law firms in Arizona. It's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. After a two-day policy meeting, Federal Reserve officials didn't significantly change their economic outlook. Most officials penciled in three rate cuts this year in their new projections. Still, some officials expect fewer cuts this year than they did back then. So with that in mind, back to a question we've asked a bunch of times this year, and we know Wall Street is waiting. Are we still on track for these cuts, and when? I asked our chief economics commentator, Greg Ipp.
We are still on track for rate cuts this year. And going into Wednesday's Federal Reserve meeting, investors thought that June was the likeliest month that the Fed would start cutting rates. Coming out of the meeting, they still think June is the most likely. In their projections, Fed officials said they still see 3/4-point rate cuts this year. I suppose if you wanted to read some significance into this, though, you'd find that there were a few officials among the group that thought there would only be two. So there's been a little bit more sort of hawkishness with respect to the outlook for inflation, which means that on the margin, maybe there's a little bit less likelihood of big rate cuts this year.
So the Fed kept the projections pretty steady despite solid economic growth and inflation that was a little higher than expected in January and February. So what does that signal to us?
Chair Jerome Powell, in his remarks to reporters, made it clear that he still thinks that inflation is progressing towards a lower level of around 2%, which is their target. The January and February data, he portrayed those as probably driven by seasonal noise, not indicative of the underlying trend. Now, he has made it clear in the past that what the Fed is looking for is confidence that inflation is headed towards 2% from above 3%. So to the extent that the January and February data didn't add to their confidence that that's happening, it didn't really give him the green light to go ahead. But I think one of the main takeaways from today is that it clearly didn't give them a red light, and not really even a yellow light either. Powell still seems to be generally constructive and optimistic that things are falling into place the way he hopes.
All three major U.S. indexes closed at record highs after the Fed's announcement. The last time the Dow, S&P 500, and NASDAQ all closed at a record on the same day was more than 2 years ago, on November 8th, 2021. We've been covering the Supreme Court's decision to allow Texas to enforce its own immigration law, allowing the state to arrest and deport non-citizens. As you heard this morning, just hours after that decision Tuesday, an appeals court reversed course, blocking any state efforts to enforce the law for now. The on-again, off-again legal showdown between Texas and the Biden administration, meanwhile, is causing confusion at the southern border. Joining me now is Elizabeth Findell, our U.S. news reporter in Texas. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thanks for having me.
So, Elizabeth, we knew yesterday's Supreme Court decision was not the final word here. This is still playing out in the lower courts. That appeals court halted enforcing the law hours after the Supreme Court decision. And today there was a hearing on the matter by the same court, the Fifth Circuit. What did the court discuss?
This was a three-judge panel, and they asked questions of the attorneys for Texas and the attorneys for the United States. Two of the judges seemed to differ pretty sharply in their interpretations of the judge. We had Chief Judge Priscilla Richman, an appointee of George W. Bush, who seemed pretty skeptical of the law. She noted that no state has ever done this before, questioned how deportations would be carried out. And then you have Judge Andrew Oldham, who is a Trump appointee and previously worked for a long time for Texas Governor Abbott, who seemed more sympathetic to the state's arguments and kind of questioned how we could know that all elements of the law are invalid when it has never been tested.
So is there any other action pending right now? Do we have a sense of what might be next?
Well, the question before the Fifth Circuit right now is whether or not to keep this law on pause while further legal proceedings play out. And they did not give an indication during the hearing of when they will make a decision on that question.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth, as we have been reporting, there's been some confusion on the ground. How is all of this playing out at the southern border?
You know, really, there hasn't been much happening. The law was very briefly yesterday allowed to go into effect, but that didn't really give the state time to actually start going through the process of these types of arrests. So presently, nothing has really changed enforcement-wise. The state does arrest people for criminal trespass if they're on private property, which is not an immigration charge, and they either give them that state misdemeanor charge for criminal trespass if they're on private property, or they hand them over to the federal government. But, you know, either way, they hand people over to Border Patrol.
That's our U.S. News reporter, Elizabeth Findell. Coming up, hedge funds, private equity groups, and other investors are exploring stakes in law firms in Arizona. We'll explain why after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
We report exclusively that the U.S. Justice Department is considering whether to allow WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to plead guilty to a reduced charge of mishandling classified information. That's according to people familiar with the matter. This opens up the possibility of a deal that could eventually result in Assange's release from a London prison, where he's been since 2019. Any deal would require approval at the highest levels of the Justice Department. A DOJ spokesman declined to comment. Assange, who is 52, is fighting a drawn-out legal battle with the British government to avoid being extradited to the U.S. to face trial for publishing thousands of confidential U.S. military records and diplomatic cables around 2010. A new bid is in for Paramount Global's film and TV studio. We report exclusively that private equity firm Apollo Global Management has made an $11 billion offer for the company. That's according to people familiar with the situation. An independent committee of directors is currently reviewing another offer from Skydance Media to merge with all of Paramount, which owns CBS and Nickelodeon. Paramount has long been an acquisition target. But the company's controlling shareholder, Sherry Redstone, and other board members have resisted selling the studio, which they consider the crown jewel of the company. Apollo's offer is a big one. It's more than the entire market capitalization of Paramount Global, which currently stands at around $7.7 billion. The Biden administration is enacting the strictest ever rules for tailpipe emissions, but it's also giving the car industry more time to comply. The rules released today by the Environmental Protection Agency ratchet up more gradually than regulators originally proposed, pushing the industry toward majority EV sales by early next decade. The less aggressive rollout is a win for traditional automakers, who had lobbied hard for a slower implementation as the pace of U.S. EV sales decelerates. The new rules apply to light-duty vehicles. Those include cars, sport utility vehicles, and most pickup trucks for model years 2027 through 2032. And a new skin test can detect Parkinson's disease. The neurodegenerative condition is usually diagnosed by symptoms like tremors, stiffness, slow movements, and problems with balance, which can take years to appear. The new test, a skin biopsy, works by detecting an abnormal protein that people with Parkinson's have inside their nerves. There are only a handful of these tests in use or development. CND Life Sciences is one of the companies that produces them. CND's chief medical officer, Dr. Todd Levine, says the test costs just under $1,500 and is usually covered in part or in full by insurance. He said the goal is to detect Parkinson's before people develop symptoms and treat them with drugs that could slow or stop the disease. An unconventional legal services program in Arizona is attracting Wall Street money. The program was launched 3 years ago with the goal of expanding access to legal services for people who can't afford or find lawyers. In 2021, the state Supreme Court lifted a requirement that the owners of law firms need to be attorneys. Since then, non-lawyers have been allowed to open firms known as alternative business structures. Private equity, hedge funds, and other investors are now taking notice. Arizona's program is at the center of debates over how to expand access to legal services and about who profits from the legal ecosystem. Here now with more on this story is National Legal Affairs reporter Erin Mulvaney. Welcome, Erin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Erin, how did this Arizona program start out? What were the goals of creating a model like this?
Arizona and even other states have studied the idea of lifting that barrier that only lawyers can own law firms. But it's a highly controversial notion in the legal world because the idea is that a lawyer has an ethical duty to his client. So there's been some wariness of allowing somebody who's an investor in some way or an entrepreneur have some kind of ownership in these law firms. So this was studied by folks in Arizona as a way to expand legal services, understanding that there's a huge dearth of attorneys for certain services. Some are critical, like eviction services or family law, you know, simple things like divorces, property law. It's just hard to find lawyers covering those things. So this was just a way to create a structure that would potentially infuse capital into new businesses and expand legal services. So that was the idea. There wasn't necessarily a specific prescribed thing that these had to be, but it was definitely to address the access to justice issue that Arizona and honestly a lot of other states are confronting.
So how is it working a couple of years in? It sounds like there's a wide range of services offered.
Yes. It's hard to judge. It still is pretty early in the process, but I looked at all 70 of them that have been approved that are new businesses in Arizona. And some were difficult to research. They're still so new, they don't even have an online presence yet. But a third of these firms are mass tort and personal injury firms. And then there are other buckets, LegalZoom type online services. And then there are some kind of random ones, some niche things like focusing on the metaverse. There's a bounty hunting one. There's some that seem a little dry, estate planning and taxes. But those are, they really do range. There seem to be a lot of creative structures out there.
Right, really across the board there. Mm-hmm. Let's get to that investment piece. I really like this quote from your article from Ted Farrell, who runs Litigation Funding Advisors. He said, quote, "Every other business is allowed to take growth capital to pay their expenses. The question is, how much smart money wants to get in bed with lawyers?" Erin, what's the answer to that when it comes to this program? How much money is Wall Street pouring in?
You know, it's hard to give an exact answer to that, but we do have estimate that about 30 to 40% of these businesses have attracted outside investors in the form of private equity or hedge funds. Already, investors do look to mass litigation and like to fund litigation around the country, but they don't have an equity stake because, like we said, there's that barrier. So this, it kind of provides a new runway for litigation finance that isn't available in most places.
That was Wall Street Journal National Legal Affairs reporter Erin Mulvaney. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Anthony Bansi, with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.